I want to start with Happy St. Patrick's Day. St. Patrick's Day is not about green beer. St. Patrick's Day is about spreading the gospel. Patrick was he lived in England, and he was a well-educated person, but somehow he got captured by slave traders and taken to Ireland, where he was made to look after animals. But he had a vision or a dream in which God said, there's a ship, your ship is waiting for you on the coast. And so he managed to escape and to go get on that ship and managed, after a long, difficult journey, to get back to England. During the time he was a slave, he had called out to God and become a devout Christian. So after he got back home, he then had another vision that said, go back and spread the gospel in Ireland. It's where he had been a slave. So he did. And so he is believed, we don't know for sure that he was the very first person to bring Christianity to Ireland, but he's regarded as the main missionary to the Irish. And that's why his day is celebrated on March the 17th, which is supposedly the day that he died. My last name is Dowd, D-O-W-D, but back in the old country, we were the O'Dowds. So that's why I'm all kitted out today. So that's St. Patrick's Day. All right, let's go. Yeah, thank you, Tori. And I wanted to say this. We don't want to take for granted the wonderful leadership of Jordan and Danielle. Thank you, guys. It's always a blessing. When they're here to lead worship, it's a blessing when we have other people, but it's a special blessing when our regular folks are here. Okay, now today we're looking at two stories that are found only in the Gospel of Luke. The reason we have four Gospels is that each one of the Gospel writers tells the story of Jesus slightly differently. And Luke has some stories that are not found anywhere else. And the two we're looking at today that Anjanette and Tafari read are found only in Luke. These stories are introduced by the familiar question and answer, what is the greatest commandment? And in some Gospels, Jesus answers the question. But in Luke, he puts the question back to the legal expert, the expert on the law, who raised the question in the first place, and he said, you're the expert. What does the law say? Law here means Torah, the first five books of the Old Testament that have all the instructions about how Israel was supposed to be different from everybody else. So the lawyer knows the answer and is probably, like me when I was in school, happy to give the right answer. Okay, love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul. Love him with all your strength and all your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. This is interesting because in some Gospels, Jesus says the first commandment is love God, and the second most important is love your neighbor. But here, the guy says, what's the greatest commandment? And when Jesus asks him, well, what do you say? He says both together. So it's he doesn't separate them. The greatest commandment is love God, love your neighbor, as you love yourself. Then Luke tells two stories. The first story is an illustration of loving the neighbor. The second story is an illustration of loving God with your whole being. Now, this is a common pattern that we find in the Bible. I'm just showing you this because if you pay attention, you'll see it over and over and over. Something is stated in two parts and then repeated in reverse. See? Love the Lord your God, love your neighbor. Here's what it looks like to love your neighbor, here's what it looks like to love God, right? And the biblical writers do that because it makes it easier for people to remember. So if you keep an eye out, you'll have fun decoding the way the biblical writers do their stuff. All right, so let's look at the first story, the one we call the Good Samaritan. This story is a parable, okay? A parable is a fictional story that Jesus made up in order to make a point. Jesus tells this particular story in order to provoke the legal expert into answering his own question, which was, who is my neighbor? So Luke tells us that the guy asked this question in order to make himself look good. Some translations say he asked it because he wanted to justify himself. And sometimes preachers will say that the guy wanted to limit the kind of people he had to regard as his neighbor. You know, cut down on the number of people he had to love, or the kind of people he had to love. But we don't know that for sure. The word law here, like I said, it means Torah. And the legal experts at the time of Jesus and afterwards, especially at the time Luke was writing, used to love to have debates about the law. What do you think? Well, I think it means this. Well, Rabbi so-and-so says it means this. Well, Rabbi so-and-so says this. And they would have these debates, and that was recreation. They loved it, right? So maybe this guy was just trying to see if Jesus wanted to have a discussion so that in order to make himself, the lawyer, look good. We don't know. Jesus could, now notice, when the guy says, who is my neighbor, Jesus could have just answered the question. So always, I love to ask myself, why didn't Jesus do X and instead he did Y? Okay, he could have just said, your neighbor that you're supposed to love as much as you love yourself is anybody and everybody. But instead, he told a parable that begins, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. Okay, this is, I made this a little too small, but I circled Jerusalem and Jericho, right? I don't know if even I can see him. Okay. There's Jerusalem. There's Jericho. Now, notice that Jericho is northeast, right? But it says he went down. That's because Jerusalem is located on a hill. You've probably seen some in the Bible, the Mount Zion. Okay, well, Jerusalem is on a mountain. So any time you approach Jerusalem, you go up. No matter where you are, northeast, southwest, you go up to Jerusalem. And when you leave Jerusalem, you go down. Right? So this guy was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. He might have been a Jewish man, probably was. Jesus doesn't say what his ethnicity was. But he was leaving Jerusalem, headed for Jericho. Then some robbers jumped him, robbed him, beat him up, and left him almost dead, the text says. So the victim is lying there in really bad shape. And in the story, three people pass by. Now, Jesus is telling, remember, Jesus is the storyteller. Jesus tells this story. So if you ever go to the Holy Land and somebody tries to show you the inn of the Good Samaritan, you can, don't be rude, but just smile to yourself because this is a fictional story. Okay? Reminds me, I may have told you all this, reminds me of the guide who was showing a bunch of tourists a skull, and he said, this is the head of John the Baptist. And the people said, wait, 3 days ago you showed us a different skull and you said, that was the head of John the Baptist, and it was a lot bigger than this one. And the guide said, this is his skull when he was a little boy. So you have to watch these people, okay? They'll tell you anything and then sell you the skull. Okay, so three people come by. This is the way all illustrative stories in all cultures are put together, right? You know this pattern. Three guys go into a bar. The first one, the second. Okay? So you'll see this over and over if you ever read any folk stories or anything like that. Number one, number two, and the third one is the most important. All right, the first person is a priest. Now, the text says a priest happened to be going down that same road. The priest is also leaving Jerusalem and going down to Jericho. Then a Levite does the same. The priest and the Levite are religious leaders just like the legal expert, right? These are the people the lawyer guy is going to identify with. So he's watching, listening to see what Jesus is going to have these people do. Now, I don't want to be rude to the preacher that told you that the reason the priest and the Levite passed by and didn't do anything was because they were afraid the guy was dead, and if they touched a corpse, they would be impure, and then they wouldn't be able to go to the temple and lead worship. Sorry, but they aren't going to the temple. They're going down. They're leaving Jerusalem and going down to Jericho. If they had been leading worship, they're done. And they only have to be ritually pure when they are in the temple. This is, by the way, true of every ancient religion that had temples. Everybody who went in there, the worshipers, the leaders, the priests, everybody had to be ritually pure. They probably had different rules about what's pure and impure. But you don't go into a temple in the ancient world unless you are ritually pure. In other words, you prepare yourself ahead of time. And they had all these rules about how you do that. Priests and Levites were ritually impure frequently, especially when making little priests and Levites. I mean, because, fluids that come out of your body make you ritually impure. God had said, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. You have to get ritually impure to do that. All right? There wouldn't have been any priests and Levites if they hadn't been ritually impure, they and their wives, a good bit of the time. Okay? But they had to purify themselves in order to go in the temple. Okay? So, anyway, it's beside the point because they weren't going to the temple. So why didn't they stop to help? It's not for any religious reason. It's not because they were weird Jews. It's just because they didn't care enough to stop. Right? They should have stopped to help the guy. He was not, in fact, dead. Okay? This is not like Interstate 95, okay? I mean, they could tell whether he's dead or not. But he wasn't. So, they would be the people who would be expected, as especially religious people who knew, love your neighbor as you love yourself, that they should have done something to help. But they didn't. The audience of the story would have expected them to do something to help, but they didn't. Why ever? Whatever reason. The third person who saw the man is a Samaritan. There are Samaritans back then and still today live near Mount Gerizim, which is a ways north of Jerusalem. They have their own temple, they have their own interpretation of Torah, and their own sacrificial system. Right? According to 2 Kings, the Samaritans were descended from the people, the Israelites, that the Assyrians, this big world power before the Babylonians, the Assyrians forgot to carry off into exile. Maybe they ran and hid in the bushes, and so the Assyrians didn't find them, and so they were left when all the learned people and the rich people were carried off to Assyria. Okay, so then the Assyrians brought other people and settled them in the northern part of what had been Israel. And they intermarried with the people who were left. So you have a mixed, a racially mixed group, and, like always happens, they mixed their religion, right? So they worshiped God, but they worshiped God in a way that was mixed up with the beliefs of the people that the Assyrians brought in. So that's the Samaritans. They're called that because the capital city of the northern kingdom was called Samaria. So the people who were left there were called the Samaritans. Okay, so when the Persians, so you get first the Assyrians beat up everybody, then the Babylonians beat up everybody, then the Persians beat up everybody. So when the Persians allowed the Jews who lived in Babylon to return to Jerusalem, the Jews did not want the Samaritans involved in the worship in the Jerusalem temple that they had rebuilt. The reason for that was that the Samaritans had gotten their religion mixed up with other religions. And the whole reason that the Jews believed the whole reason they had been carried off to exile in the first place was they had mixed up their religion with other religions. So they weren't going to do that again. So they didn't want this to have anything to do with the Samaritans or with their religion. And the Samaritans didn't want to have anything to do with them either. So this next slide tells us, this is from chapter 9 in Luke. The time grew near for Jesus to be taken up to heaven, so he made up his mind to go to Jerusalem. This is the beginning of what we're calling the journey to the cross, okay, in Luke. He sent messengers on ahead. They went into a Samaritan village. Okay, so Jesus is up in Galilee. Here's Jerusalem down here. He had to get from here to here. He has to go south, up to Jerusalem. Okay, so, but he goes through Samaritan. They went into a Samaritan village to get things ready for him. There's no Holiday Inn. There's no, you know, hotel. So what you have to do if you have to spend the night is either camp out or find somebody who will let you stay with them, right? So that's what these disciples, he sent messengers ahead to get things ready for him, to find him a place to stay. But the people there did not welcome Jesus. That was because he was headed for Jerusalem to worship. The disciples, James and John, saw this. They said, "Lord, let's nuke him." But Jesus turned and commanded them not to do it. Then Jesus and his disciples went on to another village. So the Samaritans were not kind, gentle people that the Jews hated. They despised the Jews as much as the Jews despised them. All right, you know the rest of this story. The Samaritan cleans up the man, takes him to an inn, pays the innkeeper to look after him. This is the second big surprise in this story. First big surprise, why didn't the guys, the religious leaders, do what they should have done and help the guy? What? They passed by on the now. The Samaritan, who? The Samaritan cleans the guy up, takes him to an inn, pays for the innkeeper to look after him. I love this because there wasn't any room in the inn for Mary and Joseph, not the same inn. This, like I said, this is a fictional inn. But there's room in this inn for this Samaritan to pay for a guy to be looked after. And so Jesus said, which of the three was neighbor to the guy who was beat up by robbers? The lawyer cannot even make himself say, oh, the Samaritan. He can't make himself say that. He says, the man who felt sorry for him. I mean, that's the right answer, but, you know, guy's not going to say, oh, the Samaritan was a good neighbor. No. Well, I guess the guy that felt sorry for him. So, Jesus says, be like that Samaritan. Your neighbor is anybody who needs your help, even if he belongs to a group that you think is disgusting. Be different from what your in-group expects. That's the message. Now, Before we look at the story of Mary and Martha, let's pause to consider our neighbors, the Jewish people. I'm not just talking about Jews versus Palestinians. I'm talking about all Jews in general. When we read the New Testament and treat the people that the Bible calls Jews as bad guys, we're not loving our neighbors as ourselves. Remember that this story is again a fictional parable that Jesus told to illustrate loving your neighbor. He used the priest and the Levite as bad guys, not because they were Jews. Jesus was a Jew. He didn't use them as bad guys because of some objection to purity laws. He used them as bad guys because they were leaders, just like the legal expert that asked the question. Okay? The point of the story was this. The one who acted like a neighbor was not you and people like you, but someone whom you would not expect to be compassionate, a Samaritan. Now, if Jesus told us this story, two people who walked by and didn't help would probably be me and Pastor Nathan. And the one who did help would be some gang member who was out on bail for murdering a teenager. That would be the Samaritan, the one that we would think, he's not going to do anything, or he's probably going to shoot the guy. Okay? But surprise, that's the one that offers help. The point was to shock the audience and make them sit up and take notice. All right, now I got these ideas about not dissing the Jewish people in the Bible from a friend of mine named Amy Jill Levine. She is Jewish, and she says, Tori, I know we're not there yet, but go ahead and put up that slide. When you teach a Bible story and make the Jews the bad guys, please imagine that my two kids are in the audience. Hearing you say that the bad people in this story are Jews. It's what she requests of people when she teaches. This is her book, in case you're interested. It's very interesting to read. Okay? Now, let's look at the next story. Now, the next story is not a parable. It's a story of Jesus' visit to two friends, Mary and Martha. So let's look at that story. Again, this is the second one, but I've been talking and we might have forgotten about it, okay? Jesus and his 12 friends go to visit Martha in her home. That's 13 guys. A lot of people who have to be shown hospitality. Naturally, Martha is frazzled. Now, she did invite these guys in, according to the story, but apparently she assumed that her sister Mary would help with the hospitality. But Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. I had lunch on Friday with a friend who thinks that Martha is in the right. In fact, my friend thought that Mary and Jesus and all the disciples should have been helping get dinner ready. But of course, the cultural expectation was not that the men would help. The cultural expectation was that the women would provide the hospitality, since it's Martha's house and no male relative is mentioned. So the audience would have agreed with Martha and would have been thinking, yeah, Mary, get up off your rear end and help your sister with the work. Again, the way Jesus does what he does in this story, and the way Luke tells the story, is again designed to shock the audience. So Jesus does speak, he speaks very gently to Martha. Martha, Martha, you're worried and upset about many things, but few things are necessary. Really, only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. He doesn't say, you idiot, we're not going to eat. He didn't say that. He just says, Mary has chosen what is better. The one thing is needed is for Mary and the other disciples to hear what Jesus is teaching them. If dinner is late, that's okay. Back in chapter 9 of Luke, 5,000 people had to wait for their dinner until Jesus had finished teaching. In chapter 4, Jesus himself had gone 40 days without food, and when the devil suggested that he turn stones into bread, Jesus said, people don't live by bread alone. He doesn't say people don't need bread. He just says people don't live by bread alone. Okay? No doubt, Jesus was in a minority, but he didn't put a full stomach ahead of at the top of his priority list. When dinner time comes, Jesus will be thankful for it and for Martha. But Mary's attention to his teaching is not to be criticized. That's what he said. We can wait. No, we can wait, Martha. Now, think about Mary. This may be the first time that Mary has been permitted to sit still and listen to someone talk about God. Again, that's not because Jews were mean to women. It was the culture of the time, no matter what your religion was. Still the culture in that part of the world, in many, into every culture over there in the Middle East that has not been westernized. Right? So, I think it may be significant in the story that Luke refers to Jesus when he begins the story, but when then he says Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. I think Luke does that to remind us about the wording of the great commandment at the beginning of the passage. Love the Lord your God with heart, soul, body, and mind. Again, ask yourself, why does Luke say what he says, where he says it? He could have said, Mary sat at Jesus' feet, listening to what he said. But that's not what Luke says. He says, Mary sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he said. All right? She was focused on loving the Lord. She was sitting still with her body. She was focused in her heart, her soul, her mind on the words of the Lord. All right? So she is the perfect example of loving the Lord your God with all that you are. So the religious leaders, who were the legal experts peer group, didn't beat the man up. They just failed to love him as much as they loved their own convenience. The Samaritan went against his peer group. He spent time and money to help someone whom his group despised. He loved his neighbor as much as he loved himself. Martha didn't disrespect the Lord. She worked hard for Jesus. So Martha is not, you know, Martha is not the villain here. It's just that Mary ignored the cultural expectations of her time in order to love the Lord with her whole self, heart, mind, soul, and body. This is our challenge in Lent as we journey with Jesus toward the cross. May we be aware of what our peer groups expect of us. So may we be aware of the water we're swimming in. You know, they say the fish doesn't know he's in the water, right? May we pay attention enough to know that most of the time we don't act, we just react, okay? But then may we choose to be ready to be different in order to love our neighbors as much as we love ourselves and in order to love the Lord with all that we are. Let's pray.